amazing Kate Casey. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you guys are having a great week. So this summer, like every summer, I watch Bachelor in Paradise. Now, something I've noticed is this love triangle between Blake, Dylan, and Hannah. Hannah is the doe-eyed girl. She arrived to Paradise, and we soon learned that she spent some time with Blake in the week before filming began. So I noticed there's this trend in reality television, especially this summer, where the fourth wall is breaking down a little bit. So we got to learn while the show was airing that these people had relationships with one another before the show aired, which is unlike the show has ever talked about. So I'm looking at this love triangle between Hannah and Blake. Blake is from Colorado. He looks like he was on the wrestling team in high school, and 20 years later, he would be the wrestling coach of the high school, same town. And Dylan looks like the guy in high school who maybe did Battle of the Bands and everyone thought he'd be like a big musician. But then, you know, he moved to maybe the next town over and did like wedding cover songs. Well, she's sort of vacillating between the two of them. So since they're on this resort in Mexico, again, the beach is disgusting and this is like the worst looking resort. She'll be making out with one guy while the other guy is at the bar drinking cocktails with the rest of the cast and watching her from afar. And Dylan is borderline creepy obsessed with her. Like, he'll say things like, she's the most beautiful girl I've ever been with. I don't know what I'm going to do if I don't have her. Dylan and Hannah are 24 years old. It's not like they have some sort of background where they grew up together. They've known each other for a long time. And the idea of these two thinking about themselves being in a long-term relationship, let alone marriage, is just mystifying because they barely know each other. I mean, how much conversation can you have with cameras in your face? Are you talking about 401ks? Are you talking about whether or not you're going to have children, how you vote, you know, how crazy your parents are, if you've had an arrest record? But nonetheless, they're all sort of talking about this two-week excursion to a Mexican resort as like their last chance at love. Like they've tried everything to find a partner and this is their last resort. And I believe that Blake is 30 years old. So he's like old man around town. So you have these three people. It's the big love triangle. There's been a lot of press in the last couple of weeks about the love triangle. Well, I started to do some, you know, background investigation and they're all repped by the same publicist. And it made me wonder, do you think that the publicist kind of knew going into the season and said to the producers, this girl would definitely be the kind of girl who would date this guy and this guy, and I know that because I rep them and they're up for anything? And if so, I mean, that's kind of like mastery at work. So if you're a girl right now or a guy studying mass communications in college and you're thinking, I need some sort of thesis to write this year for my degree, I would say do something on Bachelor in Paradise relationships and come up with some chart about who they were repped by and see if all the relationships are connected because they had the same publicist. Please report back to headquarters and let me know what information you come back with. This week's episode is great. Dani Baird is my friend and she's on Southern Charm. And of course, there's been a huge storyline this season that she had a boyfriend. And by the way, she called me before the season began and said, I'm dating this guy. He's so sweet. And I looked up his picture and I said, you better, you know, knock it down now because this guy is so cute and he's got a real job. So during the season, Madison apparently sent a direct message to him and it sort of unwound this whole backstory about Madison's pursuit of other men, even though she was with Austin. And from there, it turned into a fight between Shep and Madison in Colorado. And in the process of it, she said to Shep, I know your secrets, and then claimed that one of the secrets was that he had chlamydia and gave it to Dani. Dani was sitting on the other side of the couch, was totally confused. And if you go and look at the footage, you'll see that she's so confused at first and then absolutely hurt. So I got a chance to talk to her and I asked her all about what happened this season. And she touches a little bit about how they talk about it at the reunion. But really, I think you're going to hear how upsetting it was for her and how it affected her life to have someone hurl that accusation on a national television show. I asked Anthony Lario, who's hilarious, to review so far this season of Real Housewives of Orange County. We're three episodes in. Vicky's a friend of the show. We've got a new housewife, and I needed to touch base with someone else and ask them, you know, what do you think so far? And then lastly, I asked author and Boston police officer Brian Dunford to review an HBO documentary that I've been obsessed with for about 2 weeks now called Who Killed Garrett Phillips? A 12-year-old boy was strangled in a small town in New York, and it goes through the court case and you learn more about the investigation. So I had been on the search for someone in law enforcement who could kind of give me their assessment, and I was thrilled that I found somebody who's not only somebody who's worked in the police department as an investigator for 14 years, but also has written a novel. So I'm really excited for you to hear from him as well. So let's start with Danny Baird. You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. Danny Baird is one of the few people in reality television that I can tell you is a friend, is a good person, is a normal person. I am so pleased to tell you that I've tracked her down this morning. Danny, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kate. That was probably the best compliment you could give me.
Well,
that I'm normal.
You are. I'm always like, why is she subjecting herself to this? Because you are normal. And for people, I think they're kind of confused because they don't understand if you're like full member, sort of like a part-time member. This is a choice that you have made, correct?
Yeah, and honestly, at this point, in terms of what happened this season, I might as well be a main.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, I had always kind of tried to, like, control the environment a little bit, or at least try to, in terms of how involved I would be, and I mean, the season was proof. You can't really do that.
You know what? Before I ask you about the Madison stuff, can you clear up, did you really date Thomas ever?
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
No. He tried to pursue me, like, years ago. And I explained to him many times that I wasn't interested. And he just didn't get the point. He would still invite me to things, and I would assume it was like a group situation, and then it would just end up being him and I, and I it was just like over and over again I'd have to reiterate, I'm not into you.
Yeah. Did you ever date Shep?
Yes.
And that was a long time ago?
Yes. Like 8 years ago.
Dear God. Now that you look back, you're like, what was I thinking?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a different time. It was just a different time. It was before the show. And he lived in Hilton Head. He didn't even live in Charleston yet. It was just a very, very long time ago. It actually doesn't even feel like it happened. Like, it feels like another life.
Well, how long were you guys together?
It was like maybe 5 months.
Oh, okay.
5 to 6 months. It wasn't anything. Like, I had actually just gotten out of a 2.5-year relationship. So I was kind of just looking to have fun. And then we just got a little bit more serious than that.
Are you one of the only people he's been serious about in the last decade?
Well, I don't know that when I say serious, I mean, for Shep, that just means, I guess, exclusive.
I see. But did you meet his family, or were you guys like going to family events?
I met his mom. Mm-hmm. I met his mom in Hilton Head, and I had met his brother once. I'd never met his sister.
So let's go back to this season, the beginning of it. I chatted with you, and you told me you were dating this really cute, nice guy, real estate agent, and he was really worried about appearing on the television show at all. And you have tried to kind of dip your toe into the show, but keep a relatively private life. So you're sort of at this crux where, like, you knew that they were going to at some point acknowledge that you had a boyfriend, but you were really struggling with how much he was going to be exposed. So
I just felt so bad about it, because I did kind of talk him into signing that, you know, blanket release. Because he did film a scene showing Catherine's house. It didn't make air. I think they showed some like back scenes of it. But I assured him, I was like, don't worry, Gentry. I know how this works. Like, you're not going to be involved in any of the drama. Like, you're not going to, you know, I was going to make sure that he didn't appear at anything else unless it was work related. And of course, I did not think that all of what unraveled. It was like my worst nightmare. Do you remember back like months ago when you were asking me about Gentry? You were like, oh, are you still dating that cute guy? And I was like, I don't even know how to explain this. It's so confusing. It was a situation where it wasn't a big deal at all to me. And it ended up being a plot line of the show and so absolutely ridiculous that I still can't wrap my head around it. And it all simply stemmed from Madison thinking Gentry was hot. And when she was doing somebody's hair, the girl happened to know Gentry and sent him a message on Instagram. And Gentry told me. And we had just started filming, and I didn't know if Madison and Austin were together. Like, I kept hearing they weren't, and then they were, and they weren't, and they were, and I really just didn't give a shit either way. I assumed she was single because she was obviously interested in other men. Like, I didn't care. I mean, I don't blame her. He's hot, you know? Long story short, it turned into this huge conspiracy theory of me trying to break up Madison and Austin's relationship. And I honestly, it just still doesn't even make sense to me. It just, any problem that came up during the season, any confrontation between anybody, somehow I got blamed for it. It all stemmed back to this stupid message on Instagram that I didn't even send. Madison sent it. And Craig to this day still doesn't take ownership of it. He's just like, oh, whatever, Danny. You know, I'm like, no. Like, I told you that in confidence. And I really just, it wasn't a big deal when I told him. It was, the point was, I thought she was single. That was it. I didn't know that they had this terrible relationship that Craig and Shep were sick of. I had no idea.
Well, also, Craig, while so sweet, is sort of like a sorority sister. So why did you think in that moment you could tell him anything? Oh, I mean,
it was the dumbest thing I've ever done. I was very inebriated, more so than normal. And he was just, and Craig can talk. He can talk. And he was just like venting to me for a while. And I just happened to let that slip.
Okay, so she gets fired up because she's been called out.
What's so funny is, though, when it all was happening and I was seeing that it was unraveling and turning into this huge ordeal, like somehow through the game of telephone, it had turned into Madison reached out to Gentry because she wanted to have sex. And I mean, it just totally spiraled. And when they called me on the show and I knew it was on speaker and I knew like it had turned into this huge like just explosion. I called Madison, and she was getting drunken text messages from Austin, and Austin was telling her, he was lying to her, telling her that I gave him the evidence and I had the message where she wanted to have sex with him and all this stuff. And I'm on the phone with Madison. I'm like, that is not true. He's lying to you. He's trying to trick you. I don't know what to tell you. And cleared up. Well, evidently they broke up over it. And Madison decided to bring it up at Patricia's. And that's when I realized, shit, like, she's using this for airtime. And I knew, everybody's like, why did you apologize? Why did you apologize to her for telling Craig? And honestly, I just wanted it to end. I didn't want Gentry's name brought up anymore. We were at Pat's house. I knew she was trying to poke me, and I wasn't going to go there. And I did truly feel bad that I exposed their relationship inadvertently. I mean, it would have been exposed later anyway, but I didn't like that I had a part in it. And she knew that. And we had had a conversation about it over the phone, like 2 nights before. So I was really caught off guard when she came at me like that. And they didn't air it, but she ends up saying to me, she flat out said to me, if I wanted your man, I'd have him. It's really hard to explain crazy. I mean, I have a really hard time explaining this whole situation. I just kept rationalizing in my head that it wasn't going to be an issue. And honestly, I had just forgotten how many times she had brought it up. And what was on my mind was the STD thing that she had tried to put out there. Like during the season, that was on my mind. The months after, like, I just never even thought to really have a conversation with Gentry about it because I didn't think it was a big deal. He didn't even know Austin or Madison. So, I mean, it's the dumbest thing.
So now the show starts airing, and I saw that he did an Instagram post, and he was kind of explaining to people what happened and how it was a non-story.
Well, and what happened again, the reason we kind of broke up was because Madison, after the season had ended, after we had done filming, before it actually aired, and she and I kind of just squashed everything, she reached out to Gentry directly on Instagram right before Christmas, and like without asking me, and was really shady about it, and basically was trying to communicate that he was being talked about on the show with her, and she wanted to set the record straight with him. I mean, all behind my back. So he's like, Danny, what is this? Because you know how Instagram has that, like, secret folder? She was in it, and he was like, why is she contacting me again? And I looked at the message, and I couldn't believe what I was reading. And so then I had to start from square one with him. I was like, okay, well, this is what happened. I literally couldn't even explain why she was sending him the message. I just told him that she was probably trying to start something. And I said, just don't worry about it. Don't respond. And he's like, hell no. And he just freaked out. He completely freaked out. And I don't blame him, honestly.
So right now, do you talk to him, or is he just...
We still talk, but he has a new girlfriend.
Now, the other part of the problem was this scene when you're in Colorado with Madison. Walk us through what happened with the STD comment.
I honestly blacked out. I don't remember. I was in such shock that I kind of went through a couple emotions all at once. She and Shep were arguing, which wasn't abnormal at all. And we were all about to, we had like a 2.5 hour drive to Denver, and we were going to fly home the next morning. And so we're all just exhausted. And Craig and I are just waiting for everybody else to pack up. And of course, Catherine's one of the last people packing because she just takes the longest. And Austin wanted to talk to her about the weed dinner or something. So they were in the bedroom right by the kitchen having this talk. And then we had a set of cameras on us in the living room. And, you know, they were just capturing this argument with Madison and Chet. And honestly, I wasn't even really listening. I was just kind of laughing at their interaction, like how it had just quickly just turned combative again. And when the word that she said came out of her mouth and her finger was pointed at me, I literally thought there was somebody behind me. And it's like, once I realized she was talking about me, I immediately was shocked and like, okay, what? No. Who told you that? Like, where did that come from? And when she said Austin, I was even more confused because I'm like, why would Austin say that? Like, that doesn't even make sense. And I didn't realize that he was really mad at me and still is, whatever. And then I got really upset because it hit me. I'm like, oh my God, that was on camera. Like, oh my God, that was on camera. And I had like a complete meltdown. Seriously, now in Charleston, people go up to Gentry and tell him he should probably get checked because I have chlamydia now. Mm. Like, it's so terrible. I'm like she has no idea the impact that this has had, and it's absolutely humiliating, and it truly sucks. And I don't know, the whole thing makes me sick even talking about it.
Does Shep get as upset about it as you do?
No, I don't. I mean, Shep, to him, he's like, this is so beneath us, you know, he just has that mentality. But like, I don't know. The guys are like, it's not a big deal. It's just chlamydia. I'm like, it is a big deal to me. Yeah. It is a big deal to me. Like, you had somebody that basically accused me of having a disease. And that is such a stigma, like as a single woman, like how could you do that to somebody? I don't know. I've never been targeted like that. And it was even more confusing because I, in my heart of hearts, like I know Shep didn't say that. And so it made it worse because I felt like Austin and Madison had kind of, I don't know, made it up, or Austin didn't understand the conversation he and Shep were having or something. I have no idea, but it came from Austin. I did not know Austin until 2 years ago. So, and Shep and I didn't even know Austin or Madison when we dated. So the whole thing is just really gross. And it's been really difficult for me to just kind of wrap my head around.
And you have been on the show as someone who's sort of like the voice of reason. You've never attacked other people on the show. You have been Catherine's greatest ally, greatest friend. And I think that you're a real connector on the show. You connect all these people. So I think for the viewers, it's sort of mystifying. Like, why would you go after Danny?
Oh, man. That was the easiest target. You know, they know that I'm not going to come back harder at them. I'm just not. That's not my nature and that's not my personality. And I think part of Austin doesn't like the fact that, yeah, I'm a part-time character, but I have the power of a full-time character. I just do. And I don't think he likes that. And I think he was trying to hit me and make me vulnerable. And it was all wrong. The way it was done was so wrong. And seeing them at the reunion was so difficult for me. It was so difficult for me. Madison apologized to me again. Austin was like coerced into apologizing, but it's just dirty and nasty. And I don't know that I want to be involved in that. You know,
do you think that he was angry because he was in this video and it went viral and he was being made fun of and he wanted someone else to feel the same pain.
Maybe, probably. I mean, it obviously hit a nerve of embarrassment of me exposing that his girlfriend was hooking or like reaching out to somebody else and got caught. Like, I understand that, but at the same time, I didn't think he would be mad at me about it. It's not like I planted that seed just to embarrass him. I mean, I was trying to do everything to keep it quiet. I did not want it out there because I didn't want Gentry's name out there. It's kind of crazy. Like, reality, I think as the seasons go on with this show, more people want to be on it that have to be extremely dramatic and combative in order to make any impression. And that is what is happening. And, you know, it was almost easier with Ashley because they were just so outlandish. But that needed to go away because, like, Catherine couldn't be bullied anymore. You know what I mean? But, like, you can't replace Thomas and Ashley. You just can't. And unfortunately, it got replaced with extreme vindictiveness. And, like, it just went in a tone that this whole show wasn't meant to be about. Like, the whole premise of the show is to kind of show that we don't behave like that. And,
yeah.
I mean, it kind of just brought it down to an all-time low of exactly what we did not want it to be.
You've been a great friend to Catherine. I know that she's had, you know, the death of her mother.
God, that was so terrible.
Just give us an update. Let us know how she's doing.
She's actually doing really, really well. It's kind of given her, it's cleared her head almost and helped her prioritize the things that are most important to her and kind of weed out all of the minutiae that has been weighing her down. And I mean, she's really just kind of living every day, wanting to make her mom proud. And it's just so terrible, but I know she's going to make the best of it.
I know she will too. Well, tell everybody what you're working on now. We're all supporting you. I have your back. Everybody loves you. Don't you worry about that.
I'm not. Someday people will forget.
Oh, people forgot 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I mean, I forget. right now, I'm just working on my artwork. I've got my prints that I sell on my website, and I'm constantly just reworking those and or adding different ones. And right now, I don't know why, but I am like completely booked out until March with dog portrait commission.
Oh.
It is like hilarious, but I mean, everybody wants their dog done and they are willing to pay for it. So I'm happy about that. But it's like, instead of family members, they're just like, can you do my dog? Can you do my cat? I'm like, sure.
Oh, I believe it. So where can they go? How can they go and get on the list to have you do a portrait?
They can go to my website at DannyBairddesigns.com. So it's just DannyBairddesigns. I also have an art Instagram that I'm trying to get better about in terms of checking. It's so hard when people message through Instagram. It is so hard to keep up with because I have to like go through the weed through like mean comments, nice comments. It's just crazy. So I tried to do the separate work one, and that is _BB Designs. So any art inquiries can go through the website or that. You'll just get a quicker response.
And then your other Instagram is Danny Baird.
Yeah. I say my piece of the reunion, so I feel a little bit vindicated there.
Good. Well, I love you.
I love you too. Have so much fun in Hawaii.
Is there anything better than sinking into a really comfortable bed at the end of the day? Well, you're going to need a great comforter to do that. And that's why I love Buffy. They make bedding that is earth-friendly and cruelty-free. Their products are made using only sustainable and recycled materials, which makes them as soft on the planet as they are on your bed. Their latest product, The Breeze, is a comforter made entirely from 100% eucalyptus fiber to regulate temperature and keep you cool and comfortable all night long. And you know why my family loves it? Because it's made of eucalyptus fabric inside and out. It's softer than cotton and naturally soothes skin. In fact, my kids all fight over who gets to use the comforter. It's hypoallergenic, plus its high thread count shuts out dust, mold, and mites for a healthier sleeping environment. No more night sweats. Get cozy without overheating. Why not choose 100% plant-based bedding that's better for you and the earth? Buffy offers a free trial. You can try a comforter in your own bed for free. And if you don't love it, return it at no cost. So for $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter code REALITY. So again, for $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter promo code REALITY. Anthony Lario is from Tony's Tea Corner podcast. He loves reality television shows, which is right up my alley. I have asked him to watch this week's episode of Real Housewives of Orange County, 3 episodes in. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Kate, Casey, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Let's get down to it. Are you happy so far, 3 episodes in, with this franchise thus far?
I'm going to say something shocking. Yes. Yes, I am. But I think that the last couple seasons, it's been a dry spell. But you know what? When a reality show is on TV for 14 years, it's bound to happen. I think that it took us a year to get used to Emily and Gina. And I actually do feel compassion for Gina right now. And I think that Vicky's working as a friend of, because I think that her role this season is really to stir the shit up. Okay. It's like Luann de Lesseps a la season, whatever, 6 or 7 that she was demoted. So like, come on, like this is working right now. And Kelly God is giving us all we need. So I think it's pretty good. And I love the new girl.
Okay. Vicky demoted to a friend. Do we think that she is gripping her claws into the cliff? Is she trying to climb her way back up to the top? Is it possible that we can eventually see her off the show? Or do you think that she's going to go balls out this season to get back onto the show?
Oh, Vicky right now is climbing up Mount Everest. Her snowsuit has fallen off. She has no hat or gloves. She is naked climbing up this mountain so that she can be a full-time housewife again. I'm not sure if while she was filming, she knew that she was going to be demoted, which is like kind of, you know, for me, I'm watching it now through this lens of I can see what's going on. She really wanted to be a full-time housewife, and I think she was filming as a full-time housewife, but just trying to bring it as much as she can. So I think that she'll be back full-time next year.
Her engagement to Steve, which will obviously come in a couple episodes into the future, do we think they're really in love and want to get married, or do you think this was like a Hail Mary pass?
Hail Mary pass. I love mixing my football with housewives. 110% Hail Mary pass. But I also do think that, you know, Steve fills up the love tank. I think that the love tank is, you know, driving by the Sunoco station. She's got it halfway up there and it's fine with her right now. She can ride. She can ride it out.
Now, for somebody who says that he doesn't want to be famous, he sure does show up in a lot of episodes. Do you think he's diabolical and wants to be a TV star, or he's just in it because he wants to be with her as a companion?
Okay, Casey, he 100% wants to be famous. He wants to be famous so badly. And I think it's so funny, all these people that you see on Instagram commenting like, well, you know, Steve just like doesn't want to be famous, which is why, you know, the engagement wasn't shown. That is totally not true. Vicky definitely paid somebody to get him a certified or whatever, a verified blue check mark. How does Steve Lodge have a blue check mark on Instagram? He follows and unfollows people all day long like a robot. He wants to be famous.
What do you think about house husbands on Instagram liking, making comments, following people? Do we worry about them? Do we think that they need a full-time job?
Well, unless their name is Jim Marchese, I really don't care. Listen, I think that a lot of them do have these full-time jobs, but I think there's a very specific breed of person that goes on these shows, very specific breed of man that lets their wife do the Real Housewives. And I think that they're in it for the fame as well. Do I enjoy seeing the comments? You know what? Not totally, but like, I think it comes with the package deal, if you know what I mean.
Emily is very unhappy in her marriage. Shane will not film. Is he really taking the bar exam, or is he trying to find a way not to be on TV?
Oh, this is so difficult because I really love Emily and I have like such a soft spot for her. And you know what? I'm going to say this. I think that Emily deserves to be happy. And whether that's with or without Shane, she deserves the happiness. I don't know about this bar exam. I've tried looking up the records. I can't find shit. I have no idea what's happening. I can't tell. I mean, there were a couple scenes this episode and last episode that I could tell it was like production being like, okay, this is where you have to come film this. So when Shane's like, okay, I'm like being harassed. I don't want to be there. I think it was definitely production harassing him to get to the house. And then, you know, same thing with Gina, which I'm sure we'll get into later.
Well, let's get into Gina. So Gina clearly is in the throes of a very dark, bleak marital situation. She's getting a divorce. Now we know more details about domestic abuse or allegations of it. Should she be on this TV show at this point?
Well, I think it's a twofold here because one, I think Gina is really relatable because, you know, she does give me that East Coast vibe that meshes well with the West Coast vibe. I mean, she's got all bases covered. And I think it's good to bring awareness to stuff like this. But I'm not necessarily sure that's exactly what's happening because we still don't know the truth. I think it's best when things aren't so murky. So with somebody like Taylor Armstrong and Beverly Hills, that really wasn't murky there toward the end. As Camille said, we don't say that he hits you. We don't say that he does this. Like, it was all out there on the table. And I think that's better for bringing awareness to something rather than it being kind of ambiguous. So I don't know if she should be on the show or not right now. All I know is that I hope she's okay because this is very dark.
Bronwyn, new housewife. What do you think?
Okay, I think it's ironic that Tamara said to her, she kind of looks like me, and she's like me, this is the new Trace Amigas. Okay, no, Bronwyn is like Vicky, season 1 and 2, just a little bit more likable. I think Bronwyn truly is Vicky 2.0, 100%, and I like her. I really do dig her. I dig her bringing awareness to obsessive compulsive disorder, and I think that it was very classy. It was obvious that her daughter wanted to bring awareness to it as well because her daughter has been in the episodes thus far. And I think that she's great. I think that her husband definitely does want to be on TV, which is great. And I think that she's good. Yeah.
So in this episode, Tamara, Vicky, and Shannon allude to problems with Kelly. Then Vicky goes the extra length to say she knows things about Kelly, but doesn't want to talk about them, which basically is doublespeak for let's talk about the problems with Kelly. What do you think they're talking about when they mention a train?
What the hell is this choo-choo train? I'm like, are we talking the Polar Express? Like, is she up on top of the train, like talking to the ghost, like from the little kid in the Polar Express? Like, what's going on here? What is this choo-choo train? Are we talking about a gangbang? Are we talking about a physical train? Are we talking about a train of smoke? Well, I have no idea, but I'm so excited to all aboard the train. I'm very into it. I realistically have no idea what the hell it is. And it, you know, I've never heard of any implication with the word train before. Have you?
I think it has to do with sex.
A gangbang. A train makes me think a little bit like a human centipede. So I don't think that's it. But listen, who cares? This is my whole thing. Who cares if Kelly does cocaine? Who cares if she does a gangbang? Like, this is what I want to see. These are the types of women that I want to know and really get like a visage like into their lives. So I don't get why it's such a big deal. But here's the thing. Vicky might have brought it up, but did Tamara bring it up or was it Vicky?
I think they kind of both brought it up in their own way.
Yeah, Tamara seems like from the beginning she's trying to act like she's on Kelly's side. But I think there might have been like some Trace Amigas alliance started from the beginning that they're going to bring down Kelly Dodd.
So who is which alliance will Bronwyn join by the end of the season?
Okay, so I think that what's going to happen is Bronwyn is going to secure her spot on the show for a second season by kind of being sympathetic to the right people. So she's going to have an alliance with Emily. She's going to have an alliance with Kelly. But she's also going to have this cool bond with Shannon about the kids and about the marriage and stuff like that. And then thus she will have the bond with Tamara as well. So I think Bronwyn's going to be in a good place where she's going to say, hey, I like you, but that shit that you pulled wasn't good. And I just think that the only person that she's going to be on the outs with is Vicky. Not necessarily like in a bad way, or not necessarily being that there was too much turmoil or anything. Just, I think that Vicky's just kind of an outlier at this point anyway.
Interesting. Well, I love your intake. I appreciate your insight. I know how much you love and appreciate these shows, and I salute you, my friend.
I salute you.
Where can people find you?
So right now, Tony's Tea Corner is on a bit of a hiatus. So you can find me on Instagram at Anthony Lario, AntHonyLario. Check out my story highlights. I do some comedy skits and shit. And I'm going to be having a new podcast premiering in October. My favorite holiday, Halloween, called That's the Way It Is. So I can't wait for y'all to hear it. And thanks, Kate Casey, for having me on.
Thank you, my friend. Are you looking to confirm that you have a great-great-grandma who immigrated from Spain, or the family lore that you're 100% Sicilian? Now you can discover more about your relatives and learn about your story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. And one of my favorite parts is they give you a map and you can see how your family has migrated. If you love learning more about yourself and your family, this is a great gift to give to someone too. Go to Ancestry.com/reality today for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. This is a fantastic gift to give to somebody, especially a grandparent. That's Ancestry.com/reality for 20% off your first Ancestry DNA kit. Ancestry.com/reality. And for a limited time, now through August 26th, go to Ancestry.com/reality for the exclusive summer DNA kit offer for only $59. Take it now while it's still there. Go to Ancestry.com/reality today for an exclusive summer DNA kit offer for only $59. Okay, this is for all of you dog owners. We just got a family dog, and we were told it's a toy multi-poo, only to have us take it to the veterinarian and be told, I think there's a little bit of terrier in that dog. And that's why I love Embark's dog DNA breed and health kit, and you're going to love it too. Are you looking to know your dog's breed? Embark is the only research-grade dog DNA test kit on the market. They analyze 100 times more genetic information than any other product on the market. And this means their scientists look at 200,000 genetic markers and can make scientific discoveries that help all dogs have longer, healthier lives. Embark is the only company with stellar customer service and vets and veterinary geneticists on staff to talk you through your results. And right now for our listeners, Embark has an exclusive summer offer that you're not going to get anywhere else. Go to EmbarkVet, EmbarkVet.com, and use promo code REALITY to save 15% off your dog DNA test kit. Discover your dog more than fur deep. Again, visit EmbarkVet.com and use promo code REALITY to save. Who Killed Garrett Phillips is an HBO documentary. It's in two parts, and I've become somewhat obsessed with it. On October 24th, 2011, 12-year-old Garrett Phillips was murdered in his home in Potsdam, a small town in upstate New York. So police quickly zeroed in on a suspect in this unthinkable crime, Oral Nick Hillary, a black man in this mostly white community who was a soccer coach at Clarkson University and the ex-boyfriend of Garrett's mother, Tandy Cyrus. From two-time Academy Award nominee and Emmy winner Liz Garbus, the absorbing two-part documentary looks at the case from an initial investigation through the arrest and numerous legal twists and turns that culminated in Hillary's trial for murder 5 years after the crime. This two-part documentary raises troubling questions of racial bias and issues surrounding policing and the criminal justice system. I have asked Brian Dunford, who's been a Boston police officer for 14 years, to watch this series. He's been awarded the Medal of Honor twice. He's got a master's degree in criminal justice. And most importantly, his debut novel, South of Evil, was written while he was a detective. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Was this the first that you had heard of this case?
Yes, it was. And it was riveting television.
So tell me a little bit about what your first impression was as you began to watch the series.
My first impression was that it was heavily biased in favor of Nick Hillary. It was very entertaining, there were times it was a bit manipulative. There's one thing we do when I was lectured by an older detective when I first started. We were at a crime scene and someone's name came up and I turned and said, "Well, do you think it could be him?" And he yelled at me. He said, "No, I don't do that. I don't do that. I just look at the facts and I go where they lead me." And he was absolutely right. And you have to keep a clear mind about that. Which is why I'll tell you right now, I have no idea if Nick Hillary did this or not. But it's not just a cop thing. It's not something just detectives do. It's something reporters do. It's something we all do. That once an idea hardens in your head and you think, "I've got my suspect now," it's very hard to get it out of your head.
So what do you think happened in this case? Do you think that there legitimately was racial bias?
I don't know, and I know it's a hot-button topic, and it's one I truthfully like to avoid. I think there are a lot of things that probably happened off-camera or that the filmmaker wasn't privy to. First and foremost, I think Tandy probably initially agreed with the assessment that Nick Hillary was the one who likely killed her son. She now says he was probably likely involved, but it wasn't in the documentary that she didn't say anything in the documentary.
So I felt troubled in the beginning when I was watching her former boyfriend, John Jones, in the police room with her shortly after she found out that Garrett was murdered. Why was he allowed to escort her into those meetings with the police officers?
He should not have been there. He should not have been involved in any formal interview. He can bring her to the police station. That's perfectly normal. He can hold her hand during introductions, but the two primary investigators should have a private sit down where they walk through Tandy Cyrus's day and find out everywhere she was the last time she saw her son, and every other pertinent detail they want to get out of her. But that should be a one-on-one interview without him there. So that was inappropriate.
Did you think that it was strange the way that he called the 911 operator and wanted to get information?
No, I didn't, because I get calls all the time, just like that. Get calls all the time. "Hey, something happened up here. I just saw 10 police cars. Can you tell me what's going on?" It's not a good idea, what he did, but I don't think it was suspicious.
Did you find any of his body language or the statements that he made about his relationship with Tandy needing to live close by, even though they were no longer together, the fact that he arranged for her apartment with her sons, and that he seemed to have some sort of love for her still. Were those any of those things red flags for you?
Yes. Yeah. No. He's definitely got a personality that is a little bit off, I would say. He definitely was not done with her in that relationship.
So, what was it about the documentary that made you feel for certain that it was skewed for the benefit of the defense?
Again and again, they were interviewing reporters and then the attorneys who all had the same point of view, that it was a conspiracy against Nick Hillary. And I didn't think there was enough of a broader outlook of how this came about, because I have some theories about how they may have focused on Nick.
Tell me why you think they focused on Nick.
Well, as I said before, I think Tandy probably agreed in that initial interview that he was the one who likely who killed her son. But there's a few other dynamics you have to look at from the point of view of a police officer. One is domestic violence. And if a woman is killed in her home, if a woman is killed anywhere, it's 58% of the time it's domestic violence. Those are huge numbers. So anytime a woman is killed, you're looking at the husband or boyfriend as your first suspects. Now, when we're talking about children under 12, it's almost always a family or household member who's involved in killing that person. Stranger attacks resulting in death on a child under 12 are very rare in America, thank God.
So they live in this apartment building. It's quite small. The neighbors heard running. Do you think it's possible that neighborhood kids were involved?
That seems far-fetched to me. The boy was strangled, and strangulation is a very intimate crime. Less than 1% of all homicides that are committed involved strangulation. But of those, they're usually domestics, a man attacking a woman. So I don't mean to imply there was anything intimate in the assault on Garrett, but it is strangling someone is a very intimate crime. It's not something you see outside of, very rarely outside of that.
Do you think that they gave us enough information for us to form an opinion about the motive behind strangling a 12-year-old boy?
No. And there was remarkably little information about Garrett Phillips. Some of it was glaring. Some of it stood out at me the whole time. And that was concerning in the documentary.
How would that have been more helpful to you if they had given you more information about Garrett and about the relationship that he had with both men?
I wanted to know why he was taking a pill. There was a note from his mother or a note at his bedside that he had to take a pill. And I was wondering what kind of pill. And said he had some trouble at school. I was wondering if he had behavioral problems, if he had asthma, and these could lead in both different directions. If he has behavioral problems and he struggles against male figures, it could be an ongoing animosity between him and an older male. It was well documented, I guess, that him and Nick did not get along. So if he was taking some sort of behavioral medication or something, that might put that in a different context. Now, if he had asthma, if he was taking something for asthma and it was like childhood wrestling gone awry, like a headlock that wouldn't kill a healthy person, but someone who had a breathing problem, that would lead me in the direction of thinking, hey, this could be a kid. This could be a childhood accident, which I actually don't think it was. I think there was an adult who attacked a 12-year-old boy, and that's from what I saw. There were some allegations in a court document against John Jones. But what really struck me about him was he was kind of have a self-aggrandizing way of talking about himself. He had an odd self-perspective, and maybe he just got awkward in front of a camera, but there was an awkwardness about him. He admitted that, and more or less, I was hiding outside my girlfriend's house waiting for her to come home early in the morning, and I saw Nick Hillary driving her home. That's not really healthy behavior. As far as Nick Hillary, I don't think there was anything in his background that suggested he was violent.
Does that strike you as interesting that someone who has no previous violent background would commit a murder against a 12-year-old, especially a strangulation?
Not necessarily. There are people all over the place who just crack. They have a moment that just sends them over their point of tolerance when they feel like their life is coming apart and their needs are coming apart, and that's what they are, and they just lose it. And I'm not saying Nick Hillary did it or did not do it, but he was in a crisis point. He had 5 kids. He had lost his wife. I sound like he had moved out of his house. He had moved in with a number of women. That fell apart. And it's entirely possible he felt his life spiraling out of control.
Interesting. What did you think about the 3 people that were in the back of the building? And later in the documentary, there's a young man who claims he saw a black man in the window. How credible were those witnesses?
I was concerned with that. I did not like that. Changing your testimony at the last minute for a case that was big in Potsdam, that was concerning. I did not have a lot of credibility for coming up with a new story about seeing a black man in the window 5 years later.
Did the timeline make sense to you? What would it have been possible for either of those men to commit a crime in the time that in the timestamp that we were given?
Unfortunately, I think it is possible within the timestamp for Nick Hillary to have been at that apartment.
Did you think it was possible for John Jones to have been in the apartment?
Based on what they said, that they had video of him walking his dog at the time of the attack, and that he had volunteered his DNA and fingerprints, which they would have had on file anyways, and consented to being photographed, his feet and hands and forearms and everything. I'm pretty comfortable saying, no, I don't think he had anything to do with that.
Do you think it's possible that he had someone else help him with it?
No, that's something that would make better work in fiction. In real life, talking someone into strangling a 12-year-old boy is at the extremes of human existence. You're almost unlikely to find someone willing to go along with that for you.
I also noticed that John Jones makes remarks regarding a restraining order. He said that there's no way that Tandy could have written it because she doesn't use those words. What did you think about that remark? Because I thought that was a little off-putting as well.
It was off-putting. It struck me as he could have that kind of personality where he's a bit controlling and actually is seeking out a woman who is, in his opinion, less intelligent than him. There is a type of domestic violence offender. There's people who seek out people they can control. It's very unpleasant. You don't want this in your life.
Well, isn't that also possible that he lashed out because he couldn't control her 12-year-old, that he was getting in the way of her having relationships with men? Or is it possible that he was in the apartment and Garrett found him and stood up to him and John Jones lashed out at him?
Certainly anything is possible. And as I said, you try to keep an open mind towards anything that could happen in the investigation. But I don't really see John Jones as the suspect. I find him an unpleasant person. I did not really like what I saw. And he was too involved. He shouldn't have been involved in that stage of the investigation. But I didn't really see anything to make me think that he was the actual killer.
The other question I wanted to ask was about the actual timeline of events. The key witnesses were the neighbors. They heard the running down the steps and the moaning sound. Is it possible that their timeline is a little bit off? That it is possible that John Jones, for example, though there's footage of him walking his dog, that maybe the timeline on the, as far as the time of death for Garrett, is not what police believed it to have been?
It's totally possible and not even unlikely. When you're a police officer on the stand, one of the first questions the defense attorney will start asking you is about distance. And the reason is because human beings are terrible at judging distance. So he'll ask you, you'll give him one distance, and then he'll ask your partner, and your partner will say twice as far away. And he'll present it to the judges. These guys' stories are completely inconsistent. Human beings are bad with distance. We're bad with things like exact times, and we're terrible with faces.
What were the red flags in this case? Do you think that the police department looks back and they're totally embarrassed by it, but they'll never admit to it? It seems like they were a small police force, and this was way beyond their capability of solving.
I think there were probably some mistakes because they were emotionally involved with the case, and not in terms of the fact that this was John Jones's ex-girlfriend, because it was a dead kid. And I've been very fortunate. I haven't seen too many kids hurt, but I've seen a couple, and it stays with you, and it has an emotional impact. That being said, we can't forget that there was a DNA hit on Nick Hillary. Now, I'm not trying to argue that he did this or that he didn't. This technology was very new, and and there were some missteps on how it was used, so the judge suppressed it. I know that the same technology has been allowed in other cases. Now, the parallel to this case I would draw would be the O.J. Simpson case from 1995. And as obviously O.J. was found not guilty, but it's been commonly suggested that if that audience, that jury in 1995, was as familiar with DNA, which was then a brand new technology, as the average TV watcher is today, that they would have found O.J. Simpson guilty. Now, 10 years from now, the test they use might be so commonplace that no one would ever question it. We'll look back and say, huh, we had him. That never should have been suppressed. Or they might look back and say it's been completely discredited and that was the right move.
Why do you think that the judge gave a not guilty verdict? Can you understand why they did? Or do you think that maybe that was an error?
No, not only can I understand it, it was the right move. The case was entirely circumstantial. There was no physical evidence linking beyond the DNA, which was suppressed. So that wasn't taken into account. All the other evidence was circumstantial. So no, there was, based on the case he saw and that he reviewed, then he had no choice but to find him not guilty.
Several people have noted that the same case was covered by Dateline, and that the people that watched the Dateline had a totally different point of view. What is your opinion of these kinds of news shows? Is it possible for them to fairly show details of a case within like an hour segment?
I don't know. This is one of the major questions of our time that, not to bring up a certain political figure, but the term fake news is thrown around a lot. And much of the news now is skewed from one side or the other. And it seems, much like I said, as a detective, you'll start investigating a case and you'll have a suspect in your mind. And once you have that suspect, it's very hard to get him out of your head as a suspect and see a new one. And I think the same thing happens to reporters, that they'll form an opinion on the case and start reviewing the case from that perspective instead of seeing it from a clean slate every day and just going where the facts lead you.
I'm really interested in your book. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, South of Evil. It's a crime thriller I wrote when I was a detective in East Boston. And it's a story about two American police officers who find out where a drug lord buried a small fortune in cash before he died. And they sneak over into Mexico to try to keep it.
And how can we find your book?
Oh, it's available on Amazon.
Terrific. Well, I can't thank you enough, Brian. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And I appreciate your insight. And I'm excited to get your book.
Oh, thank you, Kate. I'd like to say again that I don't know if Nick Hillary did this or not, or John Jones. I hope one day we have the technology to actually find some answers on this. But my most concerning fact of all this was that it was pushed for another trial by someone who was looking to be elected. And that's what really concerns me about the justice system, when it's being manipulated for someone's personal gain and personal ambition.
I want to thank all my guests this week, Danny Baird, Anthony Lario, and of course, Brian Dunford. Make sure you check out my Patreon page. This past week, I did an episode, and it's all about Instagram. It tells you all the tricks that I have heard about and seen in this mom blogger adjacent world that I was kind of part of for a little while. And I got some inside scoop on the crazy things that these influencers are doing to get the likes and the comments and the followers. So if that's your jam, I've got a Patreon episode about it. And then you can listen to all the other Patreon episodes I've done. You have to make sure that you not only leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, which is so helpful to me, but also join the Facebook group. Go to the search button in Facebook and put in Reality Life with Kate Casey and join the group. We're talking about reality shows all week long. In fact, today we're talking about Bethany Frankel leaving Real Housewives of New York. So jump in the group. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I'm tweeting during shows and about shows all week long. And you can find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA. Hope that you guys have a great weekend, and let's circle back next week.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuge, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.